Ariel Helwani's MMA show is presented by Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit.
Hello, everyone. Hope you're doing well on this Monday afternoon. It's Ariel Helwani getting ready for a brand new episode of DC and Helwani. Very excited about it. We've got a lot going on this week, so please stand by. And I got to say, I'm still buzzing from Sunday night, The Last Dance, first two episode premiered. You know what I'm talking about, right? The new docu-series about the 90s Bulls. Gosh, it was so great. I was hanging on every word. I loved it. I even rewatched it this morning. Anyway, as you probably know, everyone's talking about it. And as you probably know, the series will continue this upcoming Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern. And I want to remind you all to listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by the great Jalen and Jacoby, which posts immediately following the broadcast. It is presented by State Farm and AT&T, so please do check out Jalen and Jacoby, The After Show, with the director, my good friend, Jason Hare, available wherever you enjoy your podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show!
Back in your life on this Monday, April 20th, 2020. Hello again, everyone. Hope you're doing well. Welcome back to a brand new episode of DC and Helwani, the critically acclaimed show that is sweeping the world. He's DC, Daniel Cormier. I'm Helwani, Ariel Helwani. We got a lot to discuss on today's program. We got so much going on. And of course, we are presented by our good friends over at Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit. DC, my man, how are you?
Good, man. I'm just kicking back and just looking at the beautiful weather that is California and just hanging out.
I have to say, and thanks for asking how I'm doing. I've had an interesting week.
Because, you know, honestly, like I was going to, but yeah. You know, we're a bit on the outs right now. Considering what happened yesterday. You know, we've been on the outs for about 24 hours. So yesterday I get the message from this guy about when the show is, and I tell him I'm probably going to take this week off. Because, you know, we have to use the podcast as place for the people to go watch the show. And so every week I hear that I'm just doing another interview with you, but this is not an interview. What's the name of the show, Ariel?
DC and Helwani.
Yeah, so what is going on with this interview? This is not an interview. And I feel like I'm just chopped liver. And then when I voiced, it's like having a partner. Hey, having a partner is cool, but having a partner that's disrespectful is bad.
Yesterday, how am I disrespectful?
When I voice my concerns, you hang up on me.
No, I did it. I did not hang up. My phone dropped the call for some reason. But to be clear, what you're unhappy with the fact that when people are recapping things that are said on this show, they're not giving the show the proper credit. They're not saying, oh, on the latest episode of DC and Helwani, they're saying DC was talking to Helwani or in an interview with Ariel,
yeah,
etc.
Like, come on, Ariel.
It's weird. Why do you think that is? Do you think that people are reluctant to give us our shine?
No, I think that, but also I think honestly, man, they see you as the reporter, me as the athlete. When in turn, we're partners. We're partners in this thing. It's not you the reporter, I'm the athlete, and we're partners. And I just want to be, you know, I think if they start to consider me a partner, you start to give me the rub. You know the old wrestling terminology? I get the rub, right? I become legit, and I'm not sure they want to make me legit just yet, you know, ready to
really?
Keep me in that athlete area a little bit, just a little bit. They'll let me come out to play, but then get back over to the fighter. I want to be like you, Ariel. I just want my respect. And if you're not going to give it to me and you're going to hang up the phone on me, that's a problem.
Well, I see. I feel like what you're truly saying is that I'm not putting you over enough. Like I'm not treating you as an equal here and that I need to do a better job of like making you on the same level as me. Is that what you're saying? Like you feel like for the last 4 weeks going into this fifth week that I haven't done a good enough job of making it seem like we are just two guys chatting?
Oh, you know, I never thought about it like that, but now that you say it, you
want to. That's what I feel like you're saying.
You want to call the sentence? No, actually, you know what? I don't care. I was just messing with you. But in the fact, I know how you are. I don't really care. But,
Oh, I was shook when you sent me that text because I said, I knew it. Because you sent me a text, just, I send you the link, and then it's like, all right, see you tomorrow. You know, we're going to tape this, at the same time, blah, blah. And you said, I'm going to take the week off. And I said, I knew it. He's not all in. used this as another thing on the schedule. He's such a busy guy. He's not all in. I called you right away, and I was like, "Now you're going to bail on me. You're going to bail on me. Now we've become a critically acclaimed hit. We're pretty much single-handedly saving ESPN, and now you're going to bail on me." I was really upset.
Do you think I'm waiting to try to leave you? Is that what you think this is? Come on, man. We're a team, man. I wouldn't leave you for anybody. Well, maybe Stephen A. I'm leaving you for Stephen A.
Stop.
I'm leaving you for Stephen A. I am leaving you for Stephen A. Dog. Like, I'm out the door, man. Like, Ari, it was nice. Like Connor, thanks for the cheddar. But I'm out, baby. I'm on to the next day. I'm going to Stephen A.
This is so perfect. You know why? Because I was going to start the show. You beat me to it. I was going to start the show, say that I had beef with you, but it wasn't 24-hour beef. It was 7-day beef. Because here I am. That's what I was saying. I had a tough week. Here I am.
Yeah,
I'm sitting back here. I'm trying to provide for my family. I'm trying to I have been attacked from all corners of the MMA world. Darren Till.
Stop.
Dylan Danis. Ben Askren, Michael Bisping attacking me. John Jones attacking me. And at some point, I was like, you know what? DC's going to come in and get my back. Like, he's going to come save the day. Not once have you spoken up over this past week, but everyone's attacking me left and right. Derek Till, dragging my name through mud. Not once are you speaking. You text me, hey, what's going on with you and Dylan Danis? What's going on with you? But you never have my back. What kind of a friend is that?
Don't you play the victim. Don't you play the victim.
I am.
You put that thing on your head. You put that thing on your head, and you started boxing. And it's gotten out of control. This Helwani boxing. Hey, this Helwani boxing. I get on the video, and I see you going, oh, Dylan Danis just ran away. I'm like, what is going on? I can't believe you're out there punking Dylan Danis. And then Darren Till. Darren Till's all mad. I don't know what happened there. And then yesterday, I see the thing. I was going to call it DT and Helwani, but I wanted people to watch. Like, what is going on? Hey, I am living in an alternate universe. I cannot believe how bold you've gotten. This Ariel. Ariel, let me tell you this. This Helwani boxing is not real. Don't fall. Ariel, don't live the character. You can't live the character. You can't live the character. Ariel, Darren Till is a monster. Leave him alone. But okay. When he goes to beat you up, okay, I'll go help and make sure I can stop it. But just know, I can't be at every show that you do. And the moment that I'm not there to protect you, these dudes gonna get you, man. So you need to fall back, Ariel. This is me talking to you as a friend. Fall back. Okay. Pick on Ben Askren and Dylan Danis.
Yeah, Ben Askren is okay.
You can do whatever you want with those two. But Darren Till, Michael Bisping, and John Jones, don't pick on those guys. Don't pick on them. Fall back on that side. Dylan Danis and my man Ben, you know, go ahead. You're pretty safe. You're safe with those guys.
Is it possible, DC, that I am what we call in the business working myself into a shoot here?
It was a work, and then it became a shoot. And now I feel like this Darren Till thing is becoming a real shoot, so I'm going to protect you from Darren
Till. Yeah.
But you got to leave the rest of these guys alone. I'm saying, just please, Ariel, fall back. This is me as a friend talking to you. Fall back. Pick on the guys that you can beat, Dylan and Ben. Pick on those two. Everybody else just got
to
leave them alone.
Just to confirm, you do think I could beat Ben and Dylan in a striking match, right? Like a straight boxing match, based on what you've seen.
Well, Ben sent me a text the other day after. He goes, maybe I'll show you my spinning back fist. Look, you're starting to drag me into the mud with you. don't drag me into the mud with you. Don't drag me into the mud with you. You can beat Ben. And you can beat Dylan. But the rest of them dudes, you're not beating.
Would you corner me?
Yeah, I'd be out there, baby. Just me and you, though. Just me and you, like Diego Sanchez and this guy. Like just like Diego Sanchez. Me and you, just like Diego and this guy. That's it. We'll walk to the back. I'll throw a towel over your shoulders. I'll be massaging you as we go to the ring, and then you go take it out. You go take it on these dudes. Put it on.
Have you gotten your Helwani boxing shirt yet? I mean, kind of a silly question, right? You did.
Andy Mayer sent me one. You know, the great Andrew Mayer. Yep, my partner in Pokey OGs. asked me for my size and sent me my Helwani boxing shirt. It's not here yet. It's not physically here yet, but it shall be. And I will wear it whenever we're doing this show.
I love it.
See, cause as you can put me over on this side, in the fight world, I can put you over, right? Because who's better than me to put you over as a fighter?
I mean, that's all the validation that I need. But listen to me, DC. Why did Dylan all those mouthy fools, all those mouthy fools can get it. You hear me? They can all get it.
You better stop.
This quarantine is bringing out the real heel, Wani. You understand? I'm sitting at home.
My goodness.
I'm starting to have some thoughts about things, and I feel like enough is enough. I'm tired of being made as the punching bag in this MMA media space, all right? They all think that I'm some weakling. They don't know that I'm a two-time Maccabi basketball captain, all right? You know what the Maccabi Games are? The Maccabi Games, the Jewish Olympics. You understand what that means, how prestigious that is? Basketball captain for the Maccabi Games, I average 4 points per game. You understand what that means?
You're also, you average 4 points a game, right? You average 4 points a game. But every week when you played in the adult league, you somehow made the game-winning shot. So were you just making the game-winning shot on your only field goal of the game? The only field goal you would score every game, you'd make it at the very end, right? So you shoot two free throws, very end of the game, you make a shot to win the game. It was ridiculous. But let me tell you something.
Please.
You're safe at a point, but you got to let some of these guys just be. You got to let some of these dudes be. They're a little too – they're a little too
dangerous. Some of my zingers have been pretty good. What about the Darren Till?
They're really good. The Darren Till, they're funny, right? They're funny until you're at home, right? You're at home developing this persona and you're safe. You're by Oliver. There's nobody around you to really put you in your place. So you're like, you can't go and you start messing with guys like Darren Till. That dude's dangerous, man. He's dangerous. I think you said something to Darren Till like, I'm undefeated there and I've never been knocked out. That's crazy. That's actually crazy.
And by the way, what happened to Ben Askren? His trash talk game has gotten so weak. Like he's talking like a 55-year-old out of touch guy who I'm actually kind of feel bad for Ben Askren.
He's
challenging us to a Frolf match. That's what he's got. Frolf. Ben, you know what Frolf is?
Ben's good. Ben's trash talk is good. Ben sometimes tends to reach for the low-hanging fruit. And that's where you got
the nose, Dana making me cry. You know how many times I've heard this stuff? Be a little original, guys. And Dylan Danis, I put him on the chat and he declined 3 times. How is that not a victory for me?
It's a victory. It's a victory until these guys grab you. It's a victory until they grab you. And then you're calling me going, hey, man, some crazy stuff happened last week. And I'll be like, I told you. I was your friend telling you, you need to stop. Because they are crazy. Hey, all these fighters are crazy. And
I know.
Ben's dangerous. Ben's dangerous. Come on, Ben's dangerous. And Darren Till's dangerous. And Dylan Danis can grapple. Right? So you need to be careful here. So you got some issues with these guys. We'll train you up, though. We'll train you up.
Okay.
We'll train you up.
Thank you.
We'll train you up.
All right, let's talk about some other stuff going on. I appreciate that. Thank you for finally coming to my defense. I mean, it only took you 7 days to speak up and once I prompted you. So since we last spoke, again, some more news. Hours after we spoke, Dana White comes out and says, we are back in business, May 9th. We're going to put on this mega card, 3 title fights, location, TBD, parts unknown. But this is what I want to ask you, not so much about the card itself, but what about what happened on Friday, DC? The card wasn't happening April 18th, right? We know that it didn't happen. Khabib, Tony, Justin Gaethje. Tony Ferguson actually cuts weight and makes weight for a fight that is not happening. How crazy is this?
Let me tell you something, Helwani. Tony Ferguson, different cat, right? But Tony Ferguson stepping on the scale at 155, that tells you how disciplined this man is. How disciplined is Tony Ferguson to get all the way down to the championship weight with nothing to gain? That is that's a boss move. I know Tony and I don't have the best relationship, but that is a boss move in a sense that why? You didn't have to do it. But
why? Is it a boss move if you ask why?
It is a boss move because it's harder to do something. It's harder to do something when there is no reward at the end. Tony was going to get on that weight, make that weight, suffer through the entire weight cut, and then go back to training. He did it just to show how disciplined and how in control of the entire situation he is. Everybody made a big deal about whether or not Khabib could make weight, whether or not Gaethje was going to be okay to make weight in 4 weeks. remember, through all this, Tony Ferguson has had to continue to train, continue to prepare, continue to monitor and manage weight. He has done that to a T, even to the point that a week after the fight was called off, he still was able to just step on the scale. That's crazy. That is actually crazy, because it shows the discipline. Most guys, when they hear a fight is off, they run to the nearest restaurant that serves their favorite food. Tony Ferguson stayed the course. And that tells me that come May 18th, May 9th, that dude is dangerous for anybody, because he is so disciplined and so in tune with himself right now going into this fight. He went through quarantine and never got off track. It's crazy.
But isn't there something to be said for the fact that he's fighting in 3 weeks? Why go through a weight cut, you know, go through all that suffering? He weighed 179 pounds on Monday. Mm-hmm. Come Friday morning, weighed 155. So if my math is correct, that's 24 pounds that he cut for a fight that isn't happening. And now he's going to go back up only to come back down. Whereas I understand what you're trying to say, but like from an actual strategy standpoint, from a health and safety standpoint, could you make the case that maybe this wasn't a smart move? Like, what's the payoff?
No, he wasn't getting paid for it. You can't. I used to have the biggest, I used to have the biggest issues with my, when I started going to 205, because remember at the Olympics, my kidneys shut down. So I was so afraid if I wasn't able to make the weight that I started doing these test weight cuts. In 3 weeks before the fight, I used to get to 208, 209. I was like, I needed to get low, and then I would just put the weight back on. And then the following week, I would get a little bit lower, and I would put the weight back on, and then I would get down the weight. That was when I was afraid that I couldn't make the weight. Once the end, when I realized I could do it and I could suck the weight off, I didn't do those, and I wasn't as committed to doing those. But every time I did that, even though I put the weight back on, I was still like a few pounds lighter than I was going into it. And then my weight just kept dropping, and I believe now – Tony's come all the way down. You know, on Saturday morning, he probably weighed 175 pounds, right? He probably weighed 175 after drinking as much as he wanted, eating as much as he wanted, but he didn't weigh 179. Do you understand? Now he's 4 pounds lighter as he's waking up, getting ready to go back into the weight cut. So it benefits him in that sense that now he's got 4 pounds less to lose. He's going to make weight easier this time. But I think more than anything, it speaks to the mental toughness of Tony Ferguson. Yeah. That's really what that is. Now, I don't think anyone should question that. And I believe that if they do, it's misguided. It's very misguided, because dude did something that most fighters won't do. And I'm telling you this right now, like, I love Habib, but he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't make the weight for nothing. He wouldn't suffer through that for no reason. Conor McGregor, he would not suffer through that for no reason. Conor was willing to say, hey, great job, Tony, put the other guy on the scale, but he wouldn't have done that himself. He wouldn't have gone down to weight for nothing. All your favorite fighters, Israel Adesanya, even a guy that doesn't cut that much weight, wouldn't suck himself all the way down to scratch for no reason, because mentally it's so tough to do that. Guys don't do that, and Tony Ferguson just did that. That's a big deal.
I think there's around 500 fighters on the UFC roster. I don't know if there's five that would do that.
There's not five. Unless, hey, there are some lower-level guys that would do it if you told them they were getting some money. But again, there's reward right at the end of the pot. Right? For nothing, I don't know who would do that. I know I wouldn't have. When I was making 205, I would not have sucked myself down to 205 for nothing. Why suffer without the reward or the ability to compete at the end of the rainbow? I think that was a massive, massive statement by Tony Ferguson. And I just think that he shows, man, that dude's in tune with what he wants to be. But when you ask me, Ariel, is it a boss move when there's a why? Why would you think something's wrong with what he did? I don't get it. Like, from that other side, right? Because I'm sure you're not alone in that thought. Other people must feel the same thing. Why? Where's the negative you guys see in that?
Well, I know his whole team was saying, don't do it, because for the reasons you just laid out, there's no payoff. Like, Tony's an incredible character. I mean, I was giving him props when we spoke on Friday, because he's given us all this news over the past month. I mean, he's single-handedly carrying the MMA news cycle. And he's, I think, as a result, becoming a bigger star as a result of all this. But like, what's the reason behind it? Like, it is a real chore to get down from 179 to 155. And other than to make some news, other than to prove a point, I don't know if the payoff is worth it. I don't know if the risk is worth the reward. I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze. You get what I'm saying? Like, why put your body through that when now you have to prepare for a fight that's 3 weeks, which makes me think, like, all right, if this fight would have happened on April 18th and Gaethje was taking the fight on short notice, but, you know, Ferguson was steady, getting ready to peak on April 18th, did you have a particular pick for that fight? And now that it's happening on May 9th, Gaethje getting more chance to prepare, more time to prepare, but, you know, Tony peaked and then has to come down and then peak again. Does it make you think that the fight will go differently? Do you get what I'm saying?
No. But you know, Ariel, like, he has to come down, but just a little bit, right? It's not so far away. Like, all these Olympic athletes that we talked about before were doing this. Now they've got to just kind of crash back down to the ground. This guy needs to go like this and then a small decline, and then he can start building back up in the final weeks. He should take a week of just cardio, barely hitting his mitts and stuff, maybe just do some jiu-jitsu because he enjoys that. And then in another week, get back to training and being ready. Look, I got to be honest, man. I think Justin Gaethje was a problem for Tony Ferguson to begin with. I think it's a dangerous fight. Maybe last week I said he should fight him. You were like, I don't know why he wouldn't just wait for Khabib. We talked about money and financials and all that. But, oh, no, this wasn't with you. I was having this conversation in my house. And he was like, one of my buddies was asking me, like, why would he fight? Why not just wait for Khabib? And I said, you don't know how he all this stuff. Dude has a gym. He has a family. He has a house. Lives in Orange County. You don't know if he needs to fight. But this was always a dangerous fight for him. And I just don't know if 3 more weeks. Justin said he would be, what, 90% for the fight when he was going to take it on 2 weeks. Now he has 5. He'll be ready to go. It's a tough fight. I don't know if my pick has changed from that point to now, but it's going to be a very difficult fight. I don't know who's going to win, though. I know it's so evenly matched. And both of these guys are the two. And both of these guys are the two best matchups right now for Khabib in the lightweight division. So it's a big one. It's a big one.
Are you working yet?
I don't know. They haven't told me yet. I mean, they haven't said anything. Everything is like so hush-hush, you know? We're waiting to – I don't even know where the fight is. I think if they asked me to work, they would have to disclose where it's happening. So I think they'll wait until the people that are going to be responsible for making the show go on when it's happening as it gets a little bit closer.
The fights that they're talking about, Ferguson Gaethje for the interim lightweight title, Cejudo Cruz, Henry Cejudo versus Dominic Cruz for the bantamweight title, Felicia Spencer against Amanda Nunes for the women's featherweight title, Francis Ngannou versus Jairzinho Rozenstruik, Jeremy Stephens versus Calvin Kattar, Donald Cerrone against Anthony Pettis once again, Greg Hardy against Jorgen De Castro, Alexi Olenek versus Fabricio Werdum, Carlos Barza versus Michelle Watterson, Jacare Souza versus Uriah Hall, Vicente Luque against Nico Price, and Charles Rosa against Bryce Mitchell. It's a pretty darn good card.
It's a really good card.
Greatest card of all time. I mean, it looks like a great UFC 200 was a tremendous card.
UFC 200 was
fighting on the prelims, on the early past prelims.
No, TJ Dillashaw fought Rafael Sun Sao on the early fight night prelims. So it's like, no fight card.
But it's
is
a great
better.
Card. Don't it's get me wrong. Card. It's going to be in a closed environment once again, and that's probably going to be the case for the foreseeable future. And I hate to keep bringing this back to you, but I have to – I was thinking about you when I was thinking about all this, like the fact that, you know, we're looking at the next few months. Dana White had that call with fighters, and they asked him about International Fight Week, and it's probably not going to happen, all that stuff. By the way, were you on the call?
No, I didn't. I didn't call it.
What? Why not?
You think, man,
you're big time or what? You some kind of gangster?
Hey, listen. All right. I'm not trying to – puff my chest out, you know, but if I need to know something, you know, I'll make a direct call, you know. Hey, boss, you know, you got a moment? Talk to your boy. Let me know what's happening.
Wow. You think you're above the locker room, huh? You're above the boys.
I'm not
above. Are you trying to say that was a mid-Carter call?
No. I was doing something. They have another one today.
Today? Yeah, two.
Yeah, there's another one today. Yeah, so I just didn't get on the Friday one.
You know what? Give me the number. I'll call and take notes for you.
Yeah, sure. Let's see how that works out. You get on there, they're ending the call. Dana's ending the call. The moment he sees you on there, he's ending the call. Well, and then might try to fight me. He might actually try to fight me if I let you on that call.
Imagine I ask a question. Hello, I'd like to ask a question on behalf of Daniel Cormier. This is Ariel Hawan. <It'll>
be...
It will be over. I can't believe that you just said that.
That is almost tempting me to give you the number.
Hi, everyone. This is Ariel Helwani calling on behalf of Dan Cook. But I can't believe you are saying that's basically a curtain jerker call. Like if you're,
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. A certain threshold. There was one meeting, Ariel. You're such a pot stirrer. That was one meeting on Friday. There's more meetings.
Yeah. What were you doing? What could you possibly be doing?
I think Friday.
You want to know about your fights?
Friday, I was actually putting some more sod in my backyard. Oh, okay. That's what I did on Friday. So I was kind of busy, but yeah. We'll see. Maybe I'll call in this afternoon. I'll call in this afternoon and report back to you.
Thank you. Please do. But
I don't have to. I don't have to because there was like an article that said what was sitting on the call.
Those.
Who told?
I don't know.
I mean, some fighter got on there right away and told.
There's a leak.
Nothing's secretive in MMA anymore. So if you're willing to work for it, you can pretty much get to anything. It's so crazy.
Oh, yeah. But what I was thinking about was, let's just say you go through with your fight, right? We were talking about Vegas. Do you really want your retirement fight to be in an empty UFC Apex? Like, is it all really about the competition, or do you want the glitz, the glamour, the 20,000 people? You know what I mean? Like, well, that is this the way it's going to end? It can't end this way, right?
It's going to end that way. It's going to end really? That way.
In an empty arena?
Empty arena, and if it's at the Apex, I think the cage is smaller. It's like the Ultimate Fighter cage.
Yes.
That's like a whole nother factor. It's like a smaller cage than the one that we fight in pay-per-views. But, you know, man, yeah, I'll go fight this guy in that empty arena. I want to fight him, so, yeah. But, you know, man, it could end like that, or it could end like Vince Carter. And Vince actually got lucky that they got to finish their game. Vince got to finish their game, and they let, you know, everybody kind of move off to the side, and he shot a three-pointer. But, like, you cannot have a chance to finish, you know. So at least I get an opportunity to finish. I don't know how it would work with my family. That's the one thing that I would want. I would want my wife and kids to experience that last one, but I don't know if that's even going to be possible if it's done in that way. So a little bit different. A little different thought.
They haven't told you anything yet, right?
Not yet. I mean, I was pretty confident that it was going to happen at the time that I, you know, in my head that I know. But right now, I don't know when in the summer it's going to happen. But I just can feel that when it does, it's going to be bigger than it was ever going to be. So that's good.
Really? Even if it's in an empty arena?
Yeah, just more good fights and you know, more people watching. You know, it's going to be – it'll be the perfect way to go out, you know. On top as the man.
Is it rude if I ask you, like, how much you weigh right now? Is that rude?
You want to know how much I weigh right now? 257 pounds.
That's not too bad, right?
That's insane. That's 10 pounds more than what I used to weigh. I've gained 10 pounds since quarantine. I'm 257 pounds right now. And if I'm not careful, I was hoping
15 pounds. Quarantine 15.
I've gained 10 pounds in quarantine. When I left, I had started to go to the gym, so I was like 247. And then I gained 10 pounds. I weigh 257 pounds. That's in the morning, though. So I'm probably 260 pounds when I go to bed, sleeping off a couple pounds. So I'm just fat, man. I think, like, today is I'm just fat, bro. Like, seriously, I can't even look in the mirror at myself anymore. But, like, I got up this morning, and, yesterday I started talking to my nutritionist, and he sent me a meal schedule for the week. I got me, my treadmill. I got my bike, and I'm going to start putting a couple workouts in the day. And then hopefully in the next 3 weeks, I'll start to, feel more like myself, you know, knock off those 10 pounds. It takes some discipline. You know, I was telling my wife this. I was like, look, I got to go to work, right? Cause I have a lot of time before the fight was supposed to happen. I need to go to work. And then if I go to work and I don't like the way I feel, or I'm not working as I used to, I have to ask myself if this is even worth doing. You know, it's like a real honest conversation with yourself, because I can't lose again. And so, yeah, we go to work today and start working on the baseline cardio, and then we get ready to go.
Today it starts.
Yeah, start moving around today. You know, I've had enough time to just sit on my butt, you know, gain 10 pounds of eating and doing everything. So now Ian sent me some meals, and I can start to make them, and I can be ready to go.
Well, I'd like to return the favor to you whenever this fight happens, as you just did for me earlier in the show. I will offer you the opportunity to have me as your lone quarterback.
I think I'm going to take Bob. I think I'm going to take Bob Cook and Javier Mendez, Rosendo Sanchez, and Leandro Vera. Yeah, I think I'm going to stick with my guys on this one. I think they've done a decent job. You know, all the pointers that you send me on text message. I mean, yo, this thing is getting out of control. Like, I can't believe this Helwani boxing has gotten so out.
It's running wild.
You have a big following now. People love you even when you're doing absurd things. Like, this is absurd.
You say that almost like you're surprised a little bit.
Not surprised, but well, I'm surprised that they're following you down this path. It's misguided. Wow. It's misguided. It's misguided. It's misguided. They're making you. The thing is, they filled you. They're like your Hulkamaniacs, right? They made you feel invincible. Remember the Hulkster started thinking he was really a tough guy. And then that's what's happening to you right now. You're starting to buy into the character, and it scares me a little bit.
No, I believe it. I believe it. It's a cute brother. DC, let me tell you,
the good people over
at Modelo. I don't know if you know this, DC, but our show is presented by Modelo, and they are brewed for those with a fighting spirit. Modelo is the official beer of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. They have partnered with the likes of UFC double champion Amanda Nunes. The fighting spirit, DC, you know all about it. It means never giving up, even when the odds are stacked against you. Like the world's best fighters, it doesn't matter where you come from. It matters what you're made of. By the way, I noticed earlier you said you have beef with Tony Ferguson. Don't think I forgot about that. Anyway, back to the ad read here. And that's why Modelo has been the gold standard since 1925, because Modelo is a crisp Pilsner-style lager that set the standard for authentic Mexican beer. Modelo uses premium hops to get the golden lager its crisp taste. So when you're watching the next big UFC fight, make sure you have a crisp, nothing better than the word crisp when talking about a crisp Modelo Especial within reach. Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois. Support them because they support us. Now, this is a very special day, DC. April 20th is a very special date for you because 7 years ago, isn't this crazy that it's happening today? 7 years ago today, DC, in San Jose, California, young Daniel Cormier made his Ultimate Fighting Championship debut against Frank Mir. And let me tell you something, DC. I was pulling up this card. I mean, of course, I have great memories of all this stuff. But, DC, this is a phenomenal card.
It was a good card.
This card tied for the most knockouts on a UFC card. Yoel Romero making his UFC debut, the first fight of the night, the curtain jerker, beat Clifford Starks. Other notables on the prelims, this was when Team Alpha Male was on fire. TJ Dillashaw won. Jorge Masvidal made his debut. Benavidez. Chad Mendez had a big win. And then the main card was just off the chain. Matt Brown defeated Jordan Meehan. Josh Thompson TKO'd Nate Diaz in his only TKO loss. Daniel Cormier beat Frank Mir via unanimous decision. And Benson Henderson beat Gilbert Melendez in the main event in a Strikeforce versus UFC fight. I still think Gilbert Melendez won that fight.
You know what's funny? I have a friend named Paul, right? He went to junior college with me, and he's a lawyer now, and he comes to all my fights. And he does not miss any. He doesn't miss any fights. And him and his friend Barry, they would come say hi to me, right, before they head out to the arena. This happened when Islam Makhachev knocked out Gleison Tibau in Boston because he fought very early. This night happened in San Jose. Come say hi, head to the arena. This dude told me just recently in my last fight, he goes, heading to the arena, DC. He goes, I don't want to miss anything. I go, really? He goes, I learned after San Jose, when I was in there by myself, there was a young Cuban fighter named Yoel Romero on the undercard. Nobody was there to watch him, but we saw it with our own two eyes, and he landed that beautiful, like, jumping knee or something to finish Clifford Starks, right? And he said, yep. He said, it's good for me to go early because I get to watch the evolution of these dudes' careers. He watches all 13 fights every single time. Ariel never misses a prelim because he does not know who's going to be the first fight of the night, because what if they turn out to be Yoel Romero? It's crazy, right?
Right.
And yeah, I mean, not many people do that.
And that was a great time because the last Strikeforce event was in January of that year, 2013. Mm-hmm. So all you guys were making the exodus over. But what do you remember? What memories can you tell us about this? Do you remember about that time?
I remember that was like only like Fox 7, I think, right? Like 7, number 7. Yep. And that was when those Fox cards were still super stacked, right? Getting on the network fight card was over time, they became a little less like special. When I think that happened when they started to like show the prelims on Big Fox 2. Remember they started doing that sometimes? They would show the prelims and the main card. Back then it was special, so they stacked them. I remember Bruce Buffer introducing me for the first time. That was because you don't know. And you don't know what's going to happen when you hit the curtain in the UFC, right? Because we didn't know exactly what people thought of Strikeforce. They always treated us as if we were just a little less skilled. We just weren't as good because we weren't in the UFC. And I remember hitting the curtain in San Jose. It was a perfect place. The place went crazy. They went crazy when they introduced me. And then I remember fighting Frank Mir and thinking to myself, like, this is my first UFC fight. And Frank Mir just fought for the belt. I think he had just fought JDS for the title right before he fought me. Yeah. So he's one of the top four guys in the world. And I remember being in there and fighting them and thinking, wow, this is not much different. And it's not much harder. It's not harder than anything I had experienced in Strikeforce. If not, you know, if not easier, you know, because Barnett and those guys were crazy tough. And I was like, man, the UFC is not much different. But I do remember being very nervous in the back and Bird Watson, it's time, baby. DC, we rolling. He's like holding that white towel. And I'm like, yo, this is actually happening. Like, I was so giddy, Ariel, like, just to make my UFC debut, and I had made it, and I was going to fight Frank Mir, a guy that I watched fight at UFC 100, which was my first time, like, really paying attention to it. And I was like, wow, this is the most amazing thing. And I remember just like, man, this is madness. This is madness.
I was looking at some old pre-fight interviews prior to that card, me and you talking, and there was some good trash talk between you guys. Like, the narrative going into the fight was you saying that Frank Mir is a front runner, that he quits when the going gets tough. Yep. He went to Jackson Wink and switched things up. And you guys were giving each other subtle jabs. I don't know if you remember, but I did one of those interviews after the weigh-in where I was standing in between both of you guys. You remember that?
I do. And he was like, when I get a hold of your arm, I'm just going to break it. And I'm like, yo, I'm not going to let you break my arm. Like, what are you talking about? Like,
that was amazing.
He's like, I was like, you're not going to break my arm, Frank. Like, what are you talking? Like, am I just going to give it to you? It's like, it was just like, that was when I was almost astounded that he thought he was just going to take my arm. Like, what do you think this is? You know, and I felt in that exchange that he may not have respected me as much as I did him because I was coming over from Strikeforce. But that was like the second time him and I were supposed to fight. They were going to send him to Strikeforce to fight me in my last Strikeforce fight, but then he got hurt. So, yeah, it was awesome, man. I remember just preparing at home and knowing I was going to fight at the HP, the SAP Center now. It's crazy to me that was 7 years ago, and now I fought more fights in the UFC than I did even before. Wow. I have more fights in the octagon than I did outside of the octagon. So it's crazy.
Yeah, I remember being at the final Strikeforce event. You fought Deion Starring.
That was bad.
Card that was.
It was weird, right?
It was a slow death at this point.
Yeah, it was weird. It was very quiet. Like, you had guys like Scott, and those guys were there, but he wasn't really running Strikeforce anymore. It was just this weird vibe. And Deion Starring, like, when they signed it, he had these photos of him looking so ripped. But then when he showed up, he, like, looked like the freaking dude that works at the car dealership. And I was like, what is going on? Like, who is this dude? And then he just, yeah, it was a weird thing. And then I think at the end, who fought? There was a title fight at the end of that fight card.
Yeah, Nate Marquardt against Tariq Saffiedine.
And Saffiedine won, right?
Won, yeah.
Yeah, Tariq Saffiedine won that fight, and it was just weird. There were a lot of people there, like 6,000-7,000 people, but it just was like, it was an odd time for Strikeforce. It was time for it to be over, because you could tell that when it was bought, it didn't mean as much anymore, so it was time to just kind of move everybody over. But then when we moved over, I'm telling you, I take a lot of pride in this, right? Strikeforce, when we came over, we kicked some serious butt, man. We kicked some serious butt in the UFC when we got there. Rhonda, Amanda, Tyron, myself, Luke,
Overeem, Nick Diaz.
Overeem, Diaz, Musasi. We kicked some serious tail
when we got there. All these guys. No, I mean, it was unbelievable. I was actually thinking about this recently because you're a very loyal guy to Scott Coker and to just everyone in general. Is it possible if Strikeforce never gets sold, is it possible you just stay with them forever, that you never actually go to the UFC? Or do you think it was inevitable? Did you have to go to the UFC?
I got to be honest with you, man. Like when Strikeforce, okay, at a point, right, when you become the champion and your competitive needs are filled in that arena, right? I had beaten Josh Barnett, and Overeem had left, and I'd beaten Bigfoot Silva, and then maybe I would have got to fight Fedor, which would have been amazing. But guys had started to kind of go over, right? They were like picking and choosing the guys that they wanted. But if all the guys had stayed the same and nobody left, I think then I have to start looking at where the financials would be, because I know that I made good money when I was a Strikeforce. But when you become a UFC champion, the money is unmatched by any other organization in the world. Like, so if you're going to truly set yourself up for the rest of your life, you had to go to the UFC. So if I would have continued on the path that I was on, winning and becoming champ, I would have probably went to the UFC chasing that money that's in the set, you know, seven figures, you know, you don't really get that in other places. I'm pretty sure Bellator has got some guys making, you know, $1 million, but when you start thinking $2, $3, $4, $5 million, I think those types of paydays are reserved for UFC champions, and I don't think anybody else is paying that.
Do you remember where you were when you found out that Strikeforce was sold? You remember how you found out? I don't know if I ever talked to you about this.
Bro, I had a 700 square foot apartment, and Rashad Evans called me and goes, "We just bought you guys." I was like, "Shut up." He was like, "We bought y'all." I was like, "What do you mean you bought something?" I was like, "You didn't buy anything, Rashad." Rashad's like, "We bought you guys." I'm like, "Rashad, you didn't buy nothing. You bought nothing." But he was saying that the UFC had bought Strikeforce. But Rashad's talking like he owns the UFC. I'm like, "You didn't buy nothing, Rashad." And then I didn't believe it. And then later on, Bob Cook told me, he goes, "The UFC bought Strikeforce." He goes, "It's crazy. I never would have thought." And then we started thinking, like, what's next? You know, because before it was like, Strikeforce had that tournament getting started, right? And everybody was like, that's the thing that's going to make sure that Strikeforce is able to sustain itself. But it didn't. All the delays and everything really did make it hard for Strikeforce to stay. But yeah.
You were shot with boys like that?
Yeah, we were buddies. We were real good friends. And we talk every now and again now, but we don't talk as much as we used to.
And then you were supposed to fight him in your 205 debut.
I was, yeah. Friends fight sometimes, man. Yeah, that's right. You know, friends fight sometimes. But, you know, and again, you know, it's not like I was fighting King Mo or Kane or one of those guys that, you know, Rashad is my friend. But we kind of he was almost one of the guys that really showed me how to fight right away. He took me out to Grudge Training Center in Colorado, and we trained together. But it was what I had to do. You know, I was on this thing where I was fighting all these UFC champions, right? I had fought Barnett. I had fought Mir, and he was just the next guy. And so nothing was going to stop what I was trying to do, whether it was a friendship or anything. You know, I had to go and do what I needed to do. It wasn't Kane, you know, wasn't nobody in my gym. So I just was going to fight him.
You remember, I was the one that did the interview with Dana White when he announced that Zuffa had purchased Strikeforce. Mm-hmm. And you know what's so crazy about that? I don't know if I've ever told this. Well, I've told this part of the story. I was at the beginning of the Strikeforce Grand Prix in East Rutherford, New Jersey, in February of 2011. And that's when Fedor fought Bigfoot Silva, if you recall. Arlovski got knocked out by Kharitonov. And I remember seeing Scott Coker standing way in the back, like not anywhere near the cage. He was standing in the tunnel, way in the back at the old Izod Center in New Jersey. He was wearing a long trench coat. And he was standing there just kind of like admiring everything and looking around. And I remember going up to him and saying, "What are you doing here, Scott? Like, shouldn't you be up, you know, towards the cage?" He's like, "Oh, you know, I'm just taking it in, this and that." And I swear to God, I remember thinking to myself, that's kind of weird that he's standing here. Come to find out later, they were very much in the midst of negotiations to sell it. And he was getting very nostalgic and sad about the fact that it was coming to an end, because less than a month later, they sold it to Zuffa. Oh. And he didn't want to sell it. It was his partners who sold it, right? Yep. The owners of the San Jose Sharks. But here's where it's crazy, DC, how I got that interview, how I got that scoop. UFC on Versus was in Louisville, Kentucky. A week before that, it was Martin Kampman against Diego Sanchez. And, you know, Dana and I were close back then, and I was supposed to do like a pre-fight interview with him, just like a nothing pre-fight interview with him to promote that card. He texts me and says, I'm not feeling well, so I'm going to have to cancel. And he never canceled on me. I'm not feeling well, I'm going to have to cancel, but I'll make it up to you, right? He says, I'll make it up to you. I was like, all right, yeah, no problem. A couple days later, he says, I'm going to make it up to you. And I said, cool. He goes, do you know how? I said, no. He goes, come to Las Vegas and I'll make it up to you. And I said, well, why do I need to come? I live in New York. Like, what do I need to come to Las Vegas? He goes, do you trust me or do you not? And I remember talking to my boss and being like, Dana White's telling me that he's going to make it up to us, but he's not telling me what the making up to is. He's like, well, what if it's announcing like a new toy or something? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, what if there's no payoff? And I was like, I think we just need to trust them. So I go to Las Vegas with Casey and Esther Lynn, Casey Lydon, who are my, you know, partners in crime, photographer, videographer, who, by the way, Esther worked for Strikeforce at the time, yeah. Showtime, right? She was a photographer. Walk into his office in Las Vegas. We still don't know what the news is. He closes the door. It's just us, 1, 2, 4 in there. And he goes, you want to know what it is? And I said, yeah, sure. I'm dying to know. I just flew cross country. He goes, we just bought Strikeforce. And I was like, get out of here.
You dry your mouth hit the floor.
Yes. He said, we just bought Strikeforce. And so we did the interview right then and there. Like, I had nothing to, I didn't prepare anything. I just did it on the fly. You know what I mean? And then I remember thinking after, I was like, I wonder if Scott Coker is happy about this or sad about it, but I couldn't talk to him yet because it wasn't out yet. We you know, had a couple of days before we released it, but I found out then. And I remember looking at Esther. I'm like, you work for them and you just found out, like, you, now your job is up in the air as well. Just a crazy set of circumstances.
And you probably thought back to New Jersey, like, oh, that's why Scott was probably in the tunnel. And like, he was all like, you know, he was disappointed. Well, that was his thing, right? He did Strikeforce from late '80s, right? When they started doing kickboxing. Yeah. So, I mean, you know that people, you know, you take that hard in business, but business is business. And I believe that the guys that have gone over, we have done really well. I mean, guys, Strikeforce guys have done really well. You know, Nick fought for the title against GSP. Gil fought for the title. I became champ. Tyron became champ. Rhonda became champ. Amanda's the double champ. Misha became champ. All these people are in Strikeforce. So it's, but again, man, like, think about this, right? Like, and this is no knock on anyone else, right? I love Strikeforce to death, but we were all there, right? We were all there, right? And we were known in the MMA sphere. But imagine who we are today. Would we have been that if we stayed in Strikeforce? That's what I'm asking you. Would we?
Man,
would
I had still some momentum.
Yeah, but would I still be who I am? But would I still be who I am? Would Rhonda still be who she is? Would Misha still be who she is? Would Amanda, with all these, Nick was already a cult hero, but Nick now is a celebrity. You know, we can go to any place in Los Angeles, any party, any Hollywood gathering, and people know who we are. And I don't believe we would have that same effect on pop culture if we stayed in Strikeforce. I just don't know if that's the case. What do you think?
Well, I'll say this. The purchase of Strikeforce was a better move for the UFC in the end than the purchase of Pride, right? I mean,
yeah.
you mentioned those names opening up the female division. No, of course, the UFC, I mean, look, with you, and I don't think I'm breaking any news to you, the feud with John Jones elevated you, right? Becoming yes. heavyweight champion, like becoming the UFC heavyweight champion is a lot different than becoming the Strikeforce heavyweight champion, mm-hmm. for example. Light heavyweight champion, much bigger. I mean, their light heavyweight belt was never really a factor. So without a doubt, being a part of the number one organization. But the great, like, sliding doors, you know, debate is, remember that first show in New Jersey, the beginning of the Grand Prix, which had a pretty darn good collection of talent, that did over 1 million on Showtime as far as viewers. Like, the momentum was really, and that's why Lorenzo wanted to buy it, right? Like, mm-hmm. he wanted to stop that momentum. It was a very shrewd move, and he got it for pretty cheap. Like, the reported number is around $40 million. So the idea that they had just gotten 1 million finally, and the momentum was climbing. We had never seen a threat like this in North America to the UFC. Who knows what happened? That was 9 years ago that it was sold.
Yeah.
Who knows
where Can we you are believe today, that? Right? 9 years already. Time goes so fast, man. It's
we
so
just had
crazy.
The 10-year anniversary on Friday of the Brawl. Do you remember the Brawl in Nashville?
Yeah, I was there.
10 years.
I was there. I was in Nashville. Mo fought. Remember Mo fought? Didn't Mo win the title?
Jager
Musasi. He won Jager the belt. Musasi. Yeah. And then yeah, that was crazy. Jake Shields was the
corner?
Man. Yeah. No. I sat right behind the corral. They would actually let me sit in the corral to watch Mo fight, even though I wasn't like a big star or anything yet. They always treated me so good, man. Coker and them always were so nice. And honestly, every now and again, before all this happened, I would still go and eat with Scott. You know, we'd go to this Korean restaurant in San Jose, and he has a favorite place, and we eat, and we just kind of catch up, you know, because, again, he's the guy that gave me my first chance. He gave me a fight on Strikeforce on television when I had zero fights. So I will always be in debt to Scott Coker. He's a really nice man.
Gary Frazier, Strikeforce Challengers. Who could forget? By the way, that King Mo interview is one of my favorite, if not my favorite, post-fight interview. Did you remember he was lying on the ground, and he had the belt wrapped around him, and he said, "I was always second place. I was always the bridesmaid, and I finally got it, Ariel."
He was crying. We were all crying. We all cried, man. We were so happy for him. He was beat up bad, though. He was tired. He had to wrestle so much at night to beat Gegard. That was one of my, you know, for all the moments I've had as a fighter, that still stands with me as one of those times that I'll never forget, because I got to watch my brother really have his moment, and it just felt like the world was his at the time, because I only knew Strikeforce. So I felt like, man, you know, he's finally made it, and the world is at his fingertips. And he wasn't able to build on that momentum, right? I think he lost to Fei Zhao in the next fight, but he was able to, like, become a champion. And I'm pretty sure even with you, like, that post you wrote about your father the other day, I can almost feel the pride, like, coming off of you that your dad – sometimes other people's accomplishments even mean more than the things that you accomplish yourself, right?
100%. Yep. 100%. I couldn't agree more. Those were great memories, man. And the brawl was wild, obviously. Do you remember what Gus Johnson said?
Yeah. Gus was crazy. He said, these types of things happen sometimes in fighting.
These things happen in MMA.
Gus, what are you doing? These things happen in MMA. Gus Johnson is the absolute man. I used to see him, like, you know, Gus is like a real button up guy. But then, like, I would see Gus in the hotel, and he'd have, like, on his baseball cap. And I was like, what? I was like, this is the same dude from the TV? I love Gus, man. Gus was a cool guy. He was a really, really cool man. And I think he makes college football so much better than,
and basketball.
And basketball. Gus Johnson makes college basketball and football fun. I do enjoy him in that job.
I want to, speaking of basketball, I want to ask you something about basketball. But DC, guess what? We got a second sponsor this week. Yes, we do.
What?
DC, let me tell you about our good friends over at ZipRecruiter, DC. ZipRecruiter are great people. Right now, as you know, we cannot be overwhelmed, DC. We have to work to keep our loved ones safe and to protect our communities. We have to work to stay strong, to stay connected, and to stay focused. And we have to work to inspire, to innovate, and to build new solutions, DC. But for all this to work, we have to work together as one, like me and you, when I'm going to corner you for your final UFC fight. At ZipRecruiter, we connect employers and people every day. But today is different. We are partnering with first responders. ZipRecruiter is government officials, the medical community, the innovators, and the manufacturing, transportation, and food distribution industries to make sure we are finding the right people for the right jobs right now. So, DC, let us work together. ZipRecruiter.com/work together. That's where you can go to find out more about what they're doing. Great people over at ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter.com/work together. Go check them out. Go support them because they support DC and Helwani. Now, before the show, DC, I said something to you. I said, and I want you
to let me mention something real quick. You know, you reading that ad, I understand it's, you know, you're reading an ad, but the fact that now, right now, during this time is when we start to appreciate the first responders. It's crazy. That should be a part of our lifestyle regardless, right? You should really honor the people that work in the hospitals, the people that work as ambulance, the people that are teachers and all these other things. These people should be held on high all the time. So I hope that when all this is over, we continue to – I see people outside clapping as people go to work in the hospital. These professionals should always be held in such high regard. So I hope that one positive that comes out of this whole quarantine and coronavirus is that we continue to respect the people that save lives and fight to save lives daily as we go forward.
Amen. Well said. Yes, 100%. Hopefully there'll be multiple positive things that come out of this very, very unfortunate turn of events, spending time with their families. But most importantly, what they are doing is incredible. Now, before the show started, I said to you, hey, DC, Did you watch The Last Dance? I mean, I was eating up every word. I watched a little bit of it again this morning. I loved it. Episode 1 and 2. If you haven't seen it, it's on the app. It's all over the place. It was incredible about the Chicago Bulls. You know, there's a lot of MMA fans. I'm tweeting about it. They have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. Like, Jesus Christ, people, can you get out a little bit? Can you educate yourself about the 97-98 Bulls, but really about, you know, Michael Jordan and the Bulls dynasty? And what did you say to me? You said, I think you said, I am very upset, or did you say something even worse than that? What did you say?
I said, I was a tad bit disappointed.
How?
I said I was a tad bit disappointed.
How?
You know, the guy, what's his name? Reinsdorf.
Oh, Jerry Krause.
He's essentially become Carol Baskin. And if you're not sure who Carol Baskin is, the guy's gone. Obviously, he died. Yeah. But Carol Baskin is a lady from The Tiger King. And
I haven't seen The Tiger King yet, so no spoilers,
but,
please.
But the narrative, and you know, it's easy when you watch him to forget what a tremendous job he did in building this team. I understand that he tried to break up the Bulls, right? And he wanted to get rid of Phil Jackson, which I still don't understand why he did that. Didn't want to pay Scottie Pippen. Well, Scottie signed the contract. I just was a little bit. That was one of the things that I didn't necessarily like. And I also didn't like the fact that they started treating him so badly. I mean, they would take shots at the dude directly. They're taking shots at the GM directly. That's not a good thing, Ariel. That is not a good thing for the team to start treating the guy that's responsible for building the team. And Mike, giving you all these teammates, making the trade to get Scottie Pippen, it's like you guys are starting to treat this man like he's nothing. I think he was given less credit than he deserved, but he wanted more credit than he had earned. If he had settled in the middle, he would have been in a good place. I think he wanted more than he had earned. He wanted full credit for everything. He wanted to show and prove that he built it, he can break it down and build it again, which was never going to be the case. But I don't believe that he got enough credit for putting that team together.
That's so what are you disappointed about? You feel that, like they're painting the him they as treat, the villain?
They're painting him as the villain.
Are you disappointed at the production or at the players? Are you disappointed at MJ and Scottie?
I'm both, right? I feel like the way that the players treated their GM was wrong. You don't do that. Also, he's not here, Ariel. Right. He's not here to tell his side of the story, right? So they go back to clips of his beliefs, but they're telling their story in the here and now, right? So it's like they're talking about what happened back then, and he's not here to truly defend what was happening in that moment. So they got to go back and try to find clips to do that. So every time he comes on and he's making these, it's a clip from him talking in 1998. It's like, what was he thinking? Well, now Mike and him can go back 23 years and go, well, this is what was happening, and this is how I feel about it now, when we don't get to see Krause's responses to that. Look, I enjoyed the show. That aspect of the show I was a little bit disappointed in. And I mean, part of it is, honestly, he's just not here to tell his part.
Yeah, it's an awkward thing because he isn't here. A very polarizing figure in the history of the NBA. And I get what you're saying. To me, it almost reflects worse on the players in the sense that, like, they're openly mocking him. Like, they're yelling at him, berating him.
Can you believe that? Points.
Scottie signed that contract. You know, he's the one that kind of messed up. And, you know, could you make a case for them maybe?
I don't even blame Scottie. I don't blame Scottie because I was from a family that was poor. So when you tell a guy you're going to make $18 million over 5 years or 6 years, 7 years, of course he's going to take it. He's a kid that had nothing. So I don't blame Scottie. I do hate that the guy wasn't willing to renegotiate with him and say, hey, you're one of the best players in the league. But it is what it is, man. Sometimes people hold you to contracts, and it sucks.
It's so fascinating, though. Like, to me, the biggest thing that stood out was the way they were open. Like, they show that clip of Jordan after the 97 finals openly talking about, like, you should have a sense of respect for the people who built this. And they're talking about this stuff. So Phil Jackson, the guy says, Jerry says this is going to be his last year coaching the Bulls. Like, the way they were so transparent about everything, maybe it's because they didn't live in this 24/7 social media world. But the stuff that they were saying, I mean, I lived through a lot of that. I remember when Scottie asked for the trade and all that stuff. that stuff would never fly today,
never
right?
Never happen. It would never happen.
It would get dissected 5 million times.
It would be on every morning show every right. day for a week, and they would just keep breaking. Different guys would talk about the same thing for 6 days, 5 days every week. And then eventually you start to come out and start questioning everything. That's right. where it is. In today's world, the things that Scotty asking for that trade, people would start to take his side. Other people wouldn't. Scotty would then go on a show and say something else that would just get him in a deeper hole. And then they didn't have that, right? They didn't have people just monitoring everything, even having the cameras around them. Like it's nuts. I did like watching the mentality of Jordan though. Well, that dude was he was a savage. He was a killer. I've never met Michael Jordan. That's one person I've never met. And I'm sure if I met Michael Jordan, I'd be very like starstruck. Not many people would get you starstruck. But if I met Michael Jordan, I met Scottie Pippen before. Really nice man. In Los Angeles one time. Real nice dude. And he was a really nice man. But I'm still a little starstruck by Scottie Pippen. And I wasn't the biggest Bulls fan. But watching those guys in their prime was it was amazing. But I didn't like that, man. I think Jerry Krause I don't know many GMs that have done better jobs ever. So.
Although the rebuild was a disaster, so that doesn't reflect poorly on him, right? Because Jordan was 100% right. Like, I never understood that as a kid. They would break my heart all the time. They would kill me. I mean, I was a big Knicks fan. And so to think, like, what, you guys are just breaking this up because you don't want to pay them or you don't want to do the right thing. I mean, Scotty wasn't making any money. I know eventually he had to be paid. But then, do you remember they hired Tim Floyd and those draft picks were horrible. Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry, et cetera. They finally struck big with Derrick Rose. But here's the beauty of it, DC. I don't want to be a shill, but there's 8 more episodes, so perhaps Jerry has a say. You know what I'm saying? Perhaps he gets his chance.
It's a rebuild. But I went through the first 2 episodes like, boy, they're giving this dude the business. When they yelled at him from the back of the bus, when they yelled at him, I was like, what is going on? You know, that was Scotty. Scotty just wasn't having it, though. Scotty, he had enough, man. And, you know, he should have been. You know, he was easily one of the best guys in the league and should have been paid fairly. But all those dudes were – could you imagine looking at the money that the players make today opposed to what they made back then?
Oh, my God. $2 million for Scottie Pippen. Arguably, you know, top 5 player, best wingman ever.
$2 million. $2 million for Scottie Pippen. Who's getting – you know, that one dude – remember that one dude, Timothy Mozgov, that's like $50 million.
Yeah.
Timothy Mozgov. Got $50 million from the Lakers. Timofey Mozgov got $50 million from the Lakers.
You know what's so amazing about this? People are now breaking this down because there's nothing else going on. What a godsend this is. Like, it's an actual real live sporting event. Like, all today, you know, all the shows are talking about Scotty and all this stuff happened 23 years ago. I don't want to be that guy, but like, I lived all this. I've seen all
and
this.
Also,
it's
and
nice.
Also, like, it's a nice do you thing. Like, hey, Ariel, and also, do you like a movie that you know the ending? Like, it's a movie that we know the ending. We know the ending.
It's so great. The second episode ended with a cliffhanger about Scotty. I know how it plays out. I know he comes back and wins the championship, but I was like, damn, they got me. I want more. That's how desperate we are right now.
I mean, I've been waiting for this show and it was good, right? I love the backstory of Mike. I love Scotty's backstory. I thought it was great. But, cause there are things that I didn't know. I didn't know that Scotty was at Central Arkansas and was just kind of like not very good. And all of a sudden was really, really good. No, I didn't. I didn't know that. I wasn't a big Bulls fan, right? So it's like, I didn't know that. Like, I knew Michael Jordan didn't make the varsity in his high school team, but we didn't really follow that. But when he got to North Carolina, he was the man, right? It's like we kind of – but it was also cool watching Roy Williams go – his high school coach goes, I think we have somebody that's going to be good. And then Roy going, okay, send him out. And then when he left the camp, he was like, he's the best player in the country. And it just – the way he would just kind of float, he would just float and then he would just shoot the ball off the backboard. And he would just kind of just sit up there, right? I do that sometime when I play basketball, right? So I'll jump and I'll just kind of float, bang shot. Did you ever think how many mid-range shots Michael Jordan shot? Can you believe how many mid-range? Is the mid-range game, it's gone now. All this.
No.
The mid-range game is gone, Ariel. It's gone.
Because he never shot threes.
He never shot threes, but no. And that whole game, right, is gone because analytics say that if you're going to shoot from that far away from the goal, you might as well be a three-pointer, right? So it's like people barely shoot a mid-range game. With no mid-range game, there would be no Tim Duncan. Michael Jordan wouldn't have had a career like he had. None of those guys would really exist because that whole part of the game is like, it's like gone. You just watch guys running up and down, dunking and shooting three-pointers. It's fun. It's fun to watch, but it's crazy.
Man, now you sound like one of those disgruntled old guys. Back in my day, it was a lot more. It was a lot better. Fundamentals.
I'm not saying it was better. I'm saying this is a fun game today. It's faster. But I'm also the guy that in wrestling, I want to see more freaking power drivers and suplexes. Like, I'm trying to get dudes. They don't let those dudes take power drivers.
Well, I don't like when they kick out of the finishing move. That drives me nuts.
That drives me nuts. It's like all
the finishing move is the finishing move. I mean, it's over, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
Yes.
False finish.
Match over.
False finish.
And yeah, like, do eight times. Ronda Rousey comes to WWE and she does the armbar 9 times. All right, your armbar isn't that great, apparently. You know, like, geez Louise.
Yo, okay, what is your deal with Ronda Rousey?
What do you mean?
I mean, this is 2 weeks. I love Ronda. Like, last week you said Ronda turned on you. Now you're like, oh, your armbar is not so good. Like,
no, I was actually defending her. Okay. I think they introduced her in a weak manner. You know what I mean? What's your beef? Hey, what's your beef with Tony Ferguson?
I like Tony Ferguson. I think Tony Ferguson doesn't like me for some reason.
Why?
He always makes mention of me. Habib told me this. He goes, this guy say I'm fat like you. And then he's like, Tony Ferguson always says things about me. I don't get it. I don't know what the problem is with Tony and I. But I'll ask him. I always just ask people. Like, if they got a problem with me, I just say, hey, is something wrong? Like, just let me know, you know? And usually they don't say anything. They just kind of like, right. Oh, it's not a problem. I'm like, okay. Well, at least I asked you. Because Ariel, I'm a man, Ariel. That's correct. I'm a man. And if somebody has a problem with me, I ask them. And if there's an issue, then we could take care of it, you know, verbally or sign the contract. That's pretty simple.
Sounds like me and Darren Till. I approached him.
He cowered. No. Okay, I want to make the Ben Askren Ariel Helwani fight. That's what I want.
Oh, Dylan, that's Danny. The one. That's
not
the
Darren
one.
Till, though. I fear for you. I fear for your well-being with Darren Till.
PFL announced before we went live that they are canceling their 2020 campaign. They're going to start again in 2021 and put their fighters on a monthly stipend. So, that's a very interesting development. Yeah, that's a very interesting development. Jairzinho Rozenstruik, by the way, campaigning to make his fight against the Francis Ngannou an interim heavyweight title fight, saying that you and Stipe are just dilly-dallying. So I figured you're down for that, right?
I think if I fight for an interim title, why not? We'll fight for the real belt, and then the winners will fight the winners, right? It's like a tournament.
Jairzinho getting a little froggy, huh?
Biggie boy. Biggie boy starting to feel himself out there. Biggie boy.
Would you be upset?
No.
You're upset about it. Sounds like feel like he took a shot.
I'm going to take my ball and go home. Yo, you got to stop instigating. You're going to get your
butt
kicked. You are going to get your butt kicked. If you don't stop instigating at some point, you're going to get your butt kicked.
Shout out to Big Shaq Diesel, who had some nice words for John Jones, and I spoke to him. Also had some very nice words about you last week. I don't know if you saw me hobnobbing with the big Aristotle. Oh, I don't know if you saw me.
DJ Diesel. I can't believe you talked to DJ Diesel, dog. Did you watch Shaq Life?
Of course.
Shaq Life is amazing. It's amazing. I love it. Shaq is a beautiful person. He's a beautiful person, man. He's nice. He's endearing. He's caring. He's just a really good person. I like Shaq a lot.
Corporate Jake is losing his mind, but guess what? 91% completion last week. So it sounds
That's what I'm talking about. It's actually doing better.
Yeah. Just a bit of advice for John Jones, if I can. The tweets, man. Like, the tweets are just... tweets are too much.
How do we keep getting back to this dude, man?
Because Shaq gave John Jones some advice. The tweets are too... It's like... It's just... I don't know. I don't know if I'm liking this right now. And as I do with the shot that he took, but like, the tweets with Jan and Dominic...
At times, you know, I just, you know, sometimes my head doesn't work. You know, I get punched in the head for a living. You know what I'm saying? He get punched in the head for a living. So sometimes he, you know, writes some crazy stuff. He writes some dumb stuff because he gets punched. You know, my brain, I get punched in the head for a living. Teflon John. That boy's unshoe. He's untouchable. Teflon John.
Congratulations to you. You have moved past the first round in the Madden tournament. I know this was pre-taped, so don't give away any spoilers, but you're playing Snoop Dogg next. So
I'm playing
Snoop Dogg. I got a lot of money on you.
Hey, I'm doing my thing. Did you see me put it on Drew yesterday? You said, I had to pull the dogs off of Drew. I had to pull the dogs off on him because I was beating him 20-6 and felt bad for him. I let him score at the end of the game.
How'd you get into this like big time celebrity tournament?
I guess the work that I've done over the course of my career has amounted to something, you know? I guess all the good work I've done. And I've got a friend named Ariel that passed along my number. You know, oh, that's what you wanted, right? So I should have put that first opposed to all the things I did in my career. Okay, I'm sorry.
I mean, they actually asked me to be a part of it. And I was like, you know what? DC would be a lot better.
Oh, so I was the replacement?
Oh, I mean, you were like not. I mean, think about how desperate they were to ask me. And then
I wasn't in.
And, well, actually, first it was Weidman because I know he's really into it. And I was like, who else could I ask? Stipe wasn't available. Oh. And then they said, all right, who else you got? And I was like, well, I've been talking to DC lately.
Oh, my God. You're the worst. Hey, you think Darren Till's going to kick your ass? I'm telling you, I got one for you, too. I got one of these for you next time I see you.
Oh. All right. Hey, we're out. Can you get one of those? I want to see you do it. Have you ever done it?
Yeah, I'm so good at it. I'm like really good at it. So good that I don't even do it anymore.
I feel you. Well, this has been fun. It has flown by.
Every time, right?
Things to get to.
Every time.
We gotta go. Yeah.
Every week. It's like the easiest. It's the best. It's the best thing on TV right now.
But will you come back for more? You know, are you going to give me a hard time next week?
Well, let me tell you something. This thing has opened up some doors for me, you know, around the media world. So you got to be very careful and treat me right. Better treat me right. You better treat me right.
When you're on one of those like breakfast morning shows in 5 years, which I've said all along that you were going to do, just remember that it all started with you on Zoom.
Ariel, let me just say this. You better treat me right because I'm Scottie Pippen. I'm Scottie Pippen.
Scott, I thought that was very Scottie selfish.
Remember when
MJ said, I thought that was very selfish of Scottie. See that?
Ooh, Scottie didn't get the surgery until like the very beginning of the season. But I'm Scottie Pippen. I'm getting 2 million. I'm underpaid. I'm Scottie Pippen. I'm underpaid for the show. I'm Scottie Pippen.
Wait a second. If you're Scottie, what does that make me?
Oh no. Did I accidentally do that? Oh no. Did I accidentally do that?
Yeah.
Oh no.
That's right. And on that note, we shall end today's program. DC, thank you very much as always for your time. Thank you to Corporate Jake, TSD. Aww. Thank you to Modelo, and thank you to ZipRecruiter. We appreciate your support, and thanks to all of you who continue to listen, download, watch, subscribe, review. DC and Helwani taking over. But for now, we're out of time. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.